Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the fun drive ended. It went really, really quickly. And thank you, everyone who chipped in. And now it's time for your big payoff, because we've decided to welcome back a Vox Pop Hall of Famer, none other than Richard P. Guthrie, who is on the show today. He is our bird expert. He is in the studio to answer all of your birding questions, and your burning birding questions at that. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Try to calm down. Dial the number, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is in the house. It's the Bird Show. It kicks off after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. And when we do that, we welcome our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Our number is 800-348-2551, and the phone lines are already loading up, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and we try to get through a few of those. Not all that we get, but we'll try to get through a few. And once again, our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, seems to be now a tradition. When the fun drive ends and we do a Vox Pop, there's Rich Guthrie.
I fly in like a swallow.
So nice to have you here. So nice to have such a quick fun drive. It was amazing.
I love it.
Yeah, it really is great. And it's great to be back to regular programming. And so once again, to everybody who pitched in and gave a couple of bucks during the fun drive, we appreciate it so much. And we are back to what we call regular programming. I don't know. That's what you and I call it, Rich.
I'm in.
And the weather, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. The weather has been lousy for a couple of months. It's beautiful today.
You've been kind.
Does that have any special effect on birds?
It ain't good. I'll tell you what happens is these cold, rainy days, day after day after day, after day, it takes its toll. Many birds can survive, can thrive around it, like ducks, water off a duck's back. But the insect-eating birds, the flying insects, wow, they're having a rough go of it.
Yeah.
And it takes its toll. This is what causes a cyclical population fluctuations in bird species. And we're in it now. We're kind of like on a roller coaster ride down. But the good news is that they rebound well. Many of them will be right back there, back in business.
When there is a prolonged period where it has been kind of cool and very rainy, will that entice birds who are not normally here to pop in for a while?
Not really.
No?
Not really. The local weather effects, not so much climate effects, but weather effects have very little influence on the birds' comings and goings. They will maybe postpone their nesting. They're active building nests and going through the breeding process. But for the most part, it has little to do with the distribution or the movement of birds. However, what it will do, though, is some of those birds that have already started nesting, the flycatchers and the swallows, oh, boy, they're in trouble.
Not happy. Not having a good time.
But if you do have nest boxes out there, where there may be swallows might have tried to start nesting, keep an eye on that. If they're not flying back and forth as though they're tending to eggs or bringing food in for babies, then it probably was not successful. And you might want to check. You might need to do some furniture maneuver.
Ah, well, such as?
Such as clean it out.
Okay.
And take a look if they're thriving, all well and good. I just had a successful brood of blue jays on my porch. It was wonderful. It's one of those things that makes it all seem worthwhile.
Blue jays are sort of nasty, though, aren't they?
They are, but you know, when they're around the nest, they're just little sweethearts. They have these little secret cooing sounds that they make to one another. The guy comes in and brings a little treat for his lover. And then they raise these four babies. And the amazing thing to me is that they trusted me so close to their nest. I could sit within arm's reach. And ordinarily, blue jays, if you're near their nest, they'll let you know.
They're fairly aggressive.
Right. You're not welcome there. And these guys trusted me so much that they would feed the young while I was sitting there.
You're like Dr. Doolittle.
Well, I don't want to put too much into it, but other than they're there probably because I offered them a degree of safety, mm-hmm. protection. I shoot off any squirrels that might come within the vicinity. They could do that themselves, but, you know, we work together on that.
Now, Rich, you have a blog. It's on the Times Union site,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The current title that's up there, Whips and Widows?
Whips and Widows.
What's that all about?
Don't go there. No. We're talking about the birds.
I see.
And it's all about whippoorwills and chuckwills widows.
Ah.
And those are two really magnificent. A lot of people are familiar with the whippoorwill. They've heard about it. They've heard it sing about in songs. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps they've even heard them. The whippoorwill gets its name from how it sounds. It says incessantly, whippoorwill,
sure.
all night long. However, in our area this year, last year as well, come to find out, we have the chuckwill's widow, which is a southern cousin of the whippoorwill that surprisingly not only moved into the area, but sort of leapfrogged over, you might consider, potential opportunities for them. I mean, really out of the expectations.
Like where?
In the Adirondacks at West Mountain, in the southern Adirondacks. There's a small colony or clavin of chuckwills widows in with the whippoorwills singing away through the night. And that's what the blog is about. It's about the whippoorwill, the chuckwills widows, the nighthawks.
All right. So it's entirely family friendly.
Oh, by all means. Oh, what would you be thinking?
I don't know. Rich, and where is your blog and how do people find it?
Times Union. TimesUnion.com. And if you go to the blogs, there it is. It's Richard Guthrie, birding.
All right, Richard Guthrie, birding. We have so many callers today, and let's just try to get to as many as we can. The number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, our guest today. We go to Gail in Kingston. Gail.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if you know the history behind how our society majestifies most birds, but then eats chickens and ducks on huge billions every year levels.
Yeah.
Well,
one with the utmost respect and the other with the utmost destruction.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. It's not a societal thing so much as we're carnivores for the most part, omnivores, and chickens have long been, fowl of all sorts, have long been part of our diet. And most people really don't get the association between the bird flying in the yard and that package of frozen chicken legs in the supermarket.
Yeah.
It's sort of a big disconnect there. It's kind of like butter and cows. But there it is. And so people choose not to go to the poultry diet. That's fine. People do. There you go. So it's more than a societal influence. It's okay, a natural enough. Instinct.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Gail. We appreciate it. Over to Edward in Loudonville. Edward, are you there?
Hello. I don't think the birds in my backyard got your message. They've been all over the place in heavy numbers throughout the spring season. So I have a quick question. I'll hang up.
Okay.
I've always noticed that at nightfall, the last bird that comes into my feeder are the cardinals,
right.
The cardinal pair.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is there a level of light at which birds will or will not fly in general or specifically?
I like it.
Well, yes, there is, most definitely. The songbirds of the daytime will retire as the light diminishes towards evening, and likewise in reverse in the morning as we get into the astronomical daylight, the civil sunrise. We also have the birds chiming in. The early bird gets the worm, and that's the one that's out there before the rest of the crowd. So there's an advantage to them for getting out early, but then, you know, there's some disadvantages. But for the most part, you're right about that. And the Cardinal, I'm glad that you noticed that, because they are typically one of the last birds to go to roost at night.
Huh.
And, you know, it's just the way they are. I'm sure there are others that follow the same pattern, but being as they are sort of a backyard bird.
But it's not a vision thing. In other words, the acuity of the Cardinal in low light situations isn't better, per se?
No, I don't believe that it's any better. Birds have a very acute eyesight. The owls and the whippoorwills and the goat suckers. That's the other name for the whippoorwills. That's all in the blog.
Goat sucker?
Yes, right. That goes back to the Dark Ages.
Chupacabra?
Say that again.
Never mind. Chupacabra.
out of my league.
Okay.
But they are caprimoglids and turnaround.
Okay.
And they do feed at night.
But they see better. The owl will see better?
Yes. The owls have a better light capturing acuity.
All right. Well, those were two great questions and different to start our program. We have to take our first break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. We talk birds today, and we'll be back.
Support for WMC comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association. Helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley, we conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, laser and skin care since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. 518-786-1700. Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room featuring New York cider, beer, wine, and spirits. Tuesday through Sunday. Now available in Massachusetts. NinePinCider.com. And Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And Rich, now we have one beautiful day, so I don't want to say the weather is getting nice.
The weather is nice.
Wait for one day.
That's fine.
We'll see what happens
tomorrow.
Take
it as it comes.
But there are things going on.
Yeah, there are. And the local bird clubs, I encourage you folks to get out, bring the kids, get the family together, and head on outdoors. And nothing so rare as a day in June. And take advantage of them while they're here. Just for example, the Waterman Bird Club down in Dutchess County, on the 14th, will be doing a walk along the Dutchess Rail Trail. That's at 7:30 a.m. Hello. However, we have one a little earlier, and that is the Hoffman Bird Club will be going up to Mount Greylop at 6 a.m. for birds and breakfast. That's on the 11th.
Mount Greylock?
Mount Greylock in Massachusetts.
Okay, well, leave our transmitter alone if you go up there.
Well, have a look at it and maybe whistle into the signal.
Hey, don't touch.
Don't touch.
You burn yourself.
And the Adirondack Birding Festival is coming up this weekend, the 9th, 10th, and 11th. That's sponsored by the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society. That's southernadirondackaudubon.org. And the Connecticut Audubon at ctaudubon.org on the 10th is having an open house. That's at 10:30 to 11:30. That's check their websites, the Waterman Bird Club and the Hudson Mohawk, hmbc.net, for a trip to the Reist Sanctuary on the 10th and on the 11th at 8 o'clock in the morning, Fox Hill Road. Check their websites for details about meeting places, contacts, and information.
Well, that sounds like fun. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Diana in Gloversville, you're next. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you? And congratulations on a great fun drive.
Thank you.
That was a lot of fun, but quick.
Yes, it was.
I have, we had, I think they're gone, a nest of cardinals in a bush right up next to a window that we could kind of sort of see what was going on. And we thought maybe the eggs didn't hatch because it seemed like it was she was there for a long time sitting on something. And then all of a sudden we had these two little puffballs show up over on Saturday. And Sunday they were kind of in and out. And now the nest is empty. So have they, like, gone? Are they gone for the season?
Could very well have fledged by now. You got the empty nest left behind there. And they keep an eye out because mom and pop will be tending to the fledglings until they are ready to go off on their own. So
okay, but there's nothing in the nest because I kind of peeked yesterday, and there is nothing in the nest.
Were they big enough to stand up and maybe flap their wings and move?
Yeah, they had kind of hopped around on a couple of different branches.
Oh, well, then that's it. They're out of the nest
they're
and, out in the wild.
Where do they go?
All right, so
nearby.
This isn't a burning bush, and it has to be trimmed.
Mm-hmm.
So is it all right to trim the bush down?
Oh, sure. Now's the time. Sure. Because the nest is now vacant. Now, cardinals, as many other birds, will maybe have a second brood. So you want to get to it right now in case they do decide to come back and raise another brood.
And that would be this year?
Yes. Yes. After this current brood is fully fledged and on their own, maybe perhaps a little bit dependent, but even still, mom and pop will be back there. Maybe many times that does happen. They'll have a second and even some birds, a third brood. Catch as catch can. They got to make the best for this breeding season while they can.
So don't touch the nest.
Don't touch
the
nest.
Trim the bush down a little bit.
Yeah, you can trim the bush. And in fact, you know, part of the courtship routine is to build or rebuild a nest. So if there's any disturbance, but I would keep contact to a minimum. In fact, after they start nesting, any nest whatsoever, don't touch, don't go near, because not so much that it affects the bird's approach to it, but it may lead a predator to it.
There you go.
Skunks and rackety coons and possums have nothing better to do all night but follow scent trails in case there's a dropped morsel.
Well, Diana, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. How long will the average cardinal live?
Oh, average songbird, 3 years.
3 years.
And 3 years.
Will the bird come back? In other words, we have cardinals in our backyard. They look the same to me. Are they the same cardinals? Do they come back year after year?
Likely the same family group that was there before, either the parents or the young. Now, that average on bird lives takes into account the very high mortality, infant mortality. Most of the young birds don't make it through year one. It's very, very tough out there.
But if they make it through year one?
Then they're off and running, and then they can go up to 10, 12 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they may come back year after year.
Once they prove their mettle, they're good to go.
I'll be darned. Let's go back to the phones, and Peggy in Queenman's Hollow. Peggy, you're on.
Hi. I've got a question about, what's that whole black sunflower seeds?
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that the blue jays swallow several at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if they actually digest the holes or if they regurgitate them and then crack them open at some point.
Well, combination of both.
Hmm.
They store the food in a crop. That's a sort of a basket in the throat.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
they will either swallow it and then they can digest the whole shebang. Or they will, as you say, they'll cough it up and tuck it into a catch someplace or feed it to the babies.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's all I needed to know. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, that's fun to watch.
Thanks, Peggy. Sounds like fun to watch.
Yeah,
Rich Guthrie
right.
is our guest. Oh, boy, sounds like a lot of fun. Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Great fun drive.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was great. I have a question about hummingbirds. This is my first time deciding to put up a hummingbird feeder,
mm-hmm.
and I understand that at least I think I understand that they are territorial. Is that true?
They are, yeah.
Hummingbirds?
Yes. Yeah. They're very...
Hummingbirds.
They're very territorial when it comes to bird feeders and nesting area. If the feeder is near the nesting area, they're not going to tolerate intruders.
That's what I thought. I believe this is... Would they come back to the same area? Because years ago, I actually saw the nest.
You're very fortunate.
They're coming from the same direction as years ago. The male is. I haven't seen the female. I usually see the female. Should I put up another feeder, say, in the back of the yard?
Sure.
See if another.
Yeah, they may be outside their territory. You could get another. Another one or pair. Now you're seeing the male because the female's back there incubating the eggs. And pretty soon the young may be visiting. And even with that, the siblings don't, you know, a lot of sibling rivalry. And so you'll see a lot of action when they're finally out of the nest.
Should I, for the siblings then, assuming I'm lucky enough to have another nest, should I put another feeder in the same area for them?
It won't hurt. They will use whatever's available because they're accustomed to going to a flower patch where there will be an abundance of flowering.
Which I have many. Yes.
Many flowers, many nectar bearing flowers, which by the way is the preferred alternative to hummingbird feeders. But nonetheless, a hummingbird feeder works well, and I keep mine going. I just change it regularly. Use just plain sugar and water, no food coloring to attract them, and you're good to go.
And how often, just so that I'm doing the right thing, how often do you change that sugar water mixture?
It depends on the weather. If it's hot and sunny, and it gives it outdoor cooking time, then I change it quite regularly. What the heck, you know? It's not that onerous, and you know.
No,
sugar is sweet, and it's also cheap. So I just go ahead and do it regularly. On the cold days that we've been having, it probably will last longer. But in any event, just keep an eye on it and give it a thorough rinsing out when you're changing it.
Now, Cynthia had brought up an interesting point I never have even considered. How large is a hummingbird nest, and where do they put their nests?
Oh, they glue their nest, so to speak, on a horizontal branch, usually in a pine tree or a fir tree or a arborvitae type of tree, an evergreen. And it's a very, very tiny nest.
High up?
Could be, but usually eye level or just a little higher than that. Let's say 5 to 10 feet.
Okay.
And watching the direction that they go, come and go from and to, is a good way to try to. But then finding the nest, you really don't want to go searching too hard.
How big is it?
Oh, it's very tiny. It's like a child's teacup size.
Okay.
Yeah, like
so it would be tough to find.
Oh, right. And it's very well camouflaged because it's made of lichens and mosses and spider webs. You know, it's a little magical fairy house. You know,
sure. Well, we have many hummingbirds, although I haven't seen any yet. The weather's been so awful. But I've never once seen where they go. I assume they were just traveling through the neighborhood.
They'll beat a path.
How long do they stay here before? They're notorious travelers. They go a long way.
All the way to Mexico.
Yeah.
And some of them beyond. Now, they'll stick around. The males, once they're done, the guys are gone. They're done. They're usually out of here in August.
Mm-hmm.
But the babies could be here into the end of September and actually into October.
And so. You say they're very territorial.
They are, yeah. But there are occasions, and I don't understand where this comes about. Now, maybe on the wintering grounds where you'll get a dozen or so hummingbirds coming to the same feeder, and they may squabble back and forth. Now, some of the western hummingbirds are more sociable than the eastern hummingbirds, the ruby-throated hummingbird. So, but in my case, I've only seen one or two or three in my patch, and they usually don't tolerate each other. If one comes in, they come immediately, they're attacked.
I guess that's why I ask, because you say at certain times of the year, perhaps at the end of the season or after a hurricane, you may see some exotic hummingbirds.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But if they're so territorial, won't the local ones keep all the colorful ones out?
Actually, it turns out the other way. The rufous hummingbird, which is the most frequently found exotic or vagrant hummingbird in the area, they tend to be extremely bossy.
Oh, really?
When they show up, it's kind of like, all right, I'm new kid on the block.
I'm in charge.
Here. Yeah.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Emily in Shelburne Falls, you're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I almost was there today to volunteer, but...
Well, I think there was still some food left. You would have been all right.
Hey, Cable, I'm looking forward to some.
Oh, are you? Well, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Here we go.
Thank you. I just have a question. I was talking to a friend who lives further out in the woodier area than I do. I live in a little village, so I don't have a bear problem. So I've been keeping my feeders up, and mostly right now I am just seeing sparrows. And she said, oh, you should just not feed the birds anymore because they're just mean, those sparrows. What do I do?
I say feed them.
Do I Why not? I just keep feeding.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I have. I keep the feeders going, and I do appreciate your concern about the bears.
Sure.
You got bears. Don't feed the birds. Easy pickings.
And I have seen bears around this
house.
But
if you do feed them, keep the feeders in a place in a way that the bears can't get at them. Because what you don't want to do is make the bears feel welcome in your yard or patch. So do try to not feed the bears. That said, at my place, I'm feeding a whole variety of birds, from chickadees to nuthatches to woodpeckers to, of course, my friends, the blue jays, and lots of grackles and lots of sparrows and mourning doves and the like. So keep it up. Life is good.
I had a lot more earlier in the spring, but it seems more dominant with sparrows right now. But that's how it is. But can I just ask one other quick question about hummingbirds? I'm mostly seeing, and you were just saying about two different species. So what I've been seeing, because we have feeders in the back, just the little, they don't have the red throated ones. Are they the females that I'm seeing, because their backs are green?
Yes, that would be the female ruby-throated hummingbird. The other one we're talking about is a brownish hummingbird that comes from the west. If you look it up in a book, it's called the rufous hummingbird. Then there are some other ones. Those greenish ones do occur out west, but a whole different variety. And the males look different. The females all look the same. So they're really tough to identify.
I'm sorry. I have one more quick thing. I'm sorry. I know. One night at like 11 at night, there was a distinct whippoorwill sound right outside our door. It was 11 o'clock at night. I thought an alarm went off that sounded like a whippoorwill, which we don't have.
That's what whippoorwills do. They sing at night. And yours is probably just a transient looking to see if it could attract a mate in your vicinity there. And if not, move on. And they'll shop around someplace else.
All right, Emily, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Justin in Phoenicia. Justin, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Rich. How are you guys?
All right.
I just moved into Phoenicia from like 3 miles away, and we have crows down here. I used to do composting at the property I was at before, and they used to eat off of that. And so I'm wondering what the best things are to feed crows to attract them, because I don't have a big compost pile for them to dine off of in Phoenicia.
Well,
I'd love to hear some suggestions.
I appreciate I'm glad you like the crows. I do too. Me and the crows get along fine. And with them, they're quite happy with cracked corn or bread. Actually, they're quite ready to take bread. In fact, when I put various food items out, they go for the bread first. They're quite easy to please. And the fun part of it is after a while they get to know you. And it's one of those trust things. Say that again?
I'm starting to see that already. They socialize pretty quick once you start feeding them.
There you go.
There's no problem feeding them commercial bread and white bread.
Not at all.
They seem to like to get things that are big and pull away. So they love pieces of bread and pasta.
Well, again, those are from the crow's diet. Those actually are nutritious.
Okay.
So keep it up. And the other thing is you could crumble some suet, and they would really love you for that.
Awesome. But,
yeah. And keep it up. I'm glad you're doing that.
And will the crows mix with the ravens?
No.
They will stay apart.
They stay apart. They very seldom. Now, the American crow and the fish crow will commingle. They won't get along, but they'll be together.
Okay, fair enough. Janice in Ballston Spa. Janice, you're on.
It was a good day? Yes. Okay, thanks. Hi. Another crow question, actually.
Okay.
Driving down the road 2 months ago, I think they were crows, not starlings. So I think it was two crows
and a raven. And the crows were harassing the raven, I think. And the larger of the birds was doing this really cool thing where it would hold its wings to its side and then do these dive down almost barrel rolls,
wow.
almost sort of like cartoonish barrel rolls. What was that?
Well, it sounds like you got it nailed right there. You got the crows and the ravens. And ravens are magnificent aerobatic flyers. They're a joy to watch. They go through these maneuvers in the air, especially when they're doing a courtship period. The other thing that's happening that you watched was there's a reverse pecking order out there amongst the birds. Little guys go after mm-hmm. the big guys, and it's all about protecting their babies and young. So they don't want larger birds in their nesting territory. So the red-winged blackbird will dive bomb the crow to annoy it, to move it along. The crow will go after the red-tailed hawk or the raven, and the red-tailed hawk will go after the eagle or the vulture that happens to be. And they'll pick on things that are, other things like great blue herons. You know, they have to tiptoe through crow territory.
Very cool. Yeah, and this was truly, it was amazing. The maneuvers the raven was doing. It was
Ravens
like something
do
I thought only happened like in like cartoon movies. Mm. I didn't think it was possible.
That's the beauty
it was
of ravens.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Janice, okay, we have cool. to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the phone number, and we'll be back. Fast program. The home stretch is straight ahead.
Support for WAMC comes from Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores, Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Studio Herbage, a contemporary floral design studio in historic downtown Johnstown, New York. Local and long-distance delivery, studioherbageflorist.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, imediaconsultant.com. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, honoring Matthew Rosell for his teachings of the Holocaust and facilitating the connection of Bergen-Belsen victims and the American soldiers who rescued them. Sunday, June 11th, SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for details. And Pelham Auto Service, at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and we talk birds here on The Big Payoff after a beautiful fun drive. Always good to have Rich Guthrie on soon after the fun drive. And a couple of emails here real fast, Rich, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Ariel in Montague, Mass. Says, Rich, here are photos of beautiful pair that have been nesting for a couple of months on top of my large wind chimes on the porch. Ariel sent the photos, and Rich, you have them.
I do.
She says, I can't find them in my North American bird book, which is surprising because the male is so distinctive with lots of red coloration on his head, upper chest, and back. They also have a beautiful sound. I don't know if you would call it a song. The couple, at least one adult child I've seen fly and perch a lot as a family, and their conversations are very musical. I hope you can identify them. What are they, Rich Guthrie?
We're on it. We got it.
What is it?
These are house finches.
Ah.
They're actually a new species to the area. Well, new is relative. It's about 30 years that they've been around. They're not native to around here. They came from the southwest, Mexico, California, Arizona, up into Colorado.
How'd they get lost?
They didn't get lost. Somebody brought them in. They were sort of like illegally transported to the area. Not allowed.
We're not going to build a wall now, are we?
Well, it's too late.
Okay.
They're here. Anyway, they're beautiful little birds, and I have a lovely song, a really great song. And what's nice about them, house finch this is, they're still on the southwest time clock. So for them, springtime comes in January. And so they're out there singing this beautiful song in January.
Okay. So they're not that bright.
Well, no, they're right on target. Okay. They're just out to brighten your day.
Can you make the sound?
No.
All right. This one's from Stephen in Pine Bush. Can birds produce sounds that we can't hear? If
yes.
they do, why?
Because they have audio capabilities or vocal capabilities that are above our frequency level.
Higher or lower?
Lower. I mean, oh, nope, nope, higher.
Higher.
The winter wren, for example. Winter wren is a tiny little wren. This is the guy that is pictured on the back of the old British farthing. Tiny little bird, tiny little coin, tiny little bird. Mm-hmm. And but it was the winter wren back then, or the wren, as they call it. But it has a song that sounds like it stops mid-song. It's going along singing this beautiful song, and then all of a sudden it stops. Then it picks up again a few seconds later.
Oh.
And in the middle there, there's a bunch of singing going on, so high-pitched we can't hear it.
Oh, I'll be darned. So the average young person, before time takes its toll, might hear 20,000 cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And if that goes down by now, you and I, we barely can hear anything at all. But
hello, you say what?
Yeah, exactly. How high? What's the frequency?
I don't have a frequency. No, it's above the 20,000, maybe 22, 24,000.
So maybe someone with really good hearing could pick those out.
I'd like to know that. Maybe a young, real young, you know, these young kids, they can hear stuff above. But it can be heard if you take a recording and slow it down.
Yes.
Drop it an octave. Then you can, and it's actually what's in there is we're missing some of the good parts.
Yeah, I've heard some Grateful Dead albums where they've done that. This one is from Amy, who says, I saw what I thought was a new bird at our bird feeder a few weeks ago, an orange and brown finch-like bird headed for our bird guides and found it was a house finch. Two different books gave two slightly different answers. One said it was a variant house finch, and the other said it was a juvenile phase. Is it one or the other or both? And that's from Amy.
Well, the juveniles of the house finch, same bird we talked about with this picture, the juvenile will not have the red.
Okay.
It's only the adult males that have that red. However, given that there is a small genetic pool of house finches out there, it started out as a small population of illegally transported birds. There are some color variants that are occasionally will show up. And those, kind of interesting, they'll be orange or yellowish, off-red, but the most of them are rose-red coloration.
Okay, and quickly, before we get to the phones here, in the green room, you mentioned something about you doing patch and catch, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know, this is a fun thing.
Is it that you do?
It's kind of like backyard exploration.
What's it called?
Patch catch.
Patch catch.
Yeah, just
explain.
A little catchy little
explain.
Thing. And it's all about the birds in the trees and bugs in the shrubs. It's sort of like a handhold walk around backyard, see what we got.
It's like an inventory?
Explore inventory, a little report about what's there and what might be there and what more might be there with a little fixing up or an improvement.
And so you actually do this for people. I could say, Rich, come over to my house and do this.
Yes, you can.
All right. How do people find out more? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on my email address is one way to do it, and that's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
And you love answering questions in general.
So I do.
The email is, now you spell Guthrie, spell it out for us.
Richard, common spelling,
okay.
P as in Peter, Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, at Gmail, that's G-M-A-I-L,
we get that.
.com.
All right, thanks, Rich Guthrie. And now back to the phones we go. Lisa in Amsterdam. Lisa, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My subject is peregrine falcons. A few years ago, I was in Menance, and I saw a pair that I understand were mating and under a bridge, and then
mm-hmm.
they had roosted under a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I was walking along the newly opened Amsterdam Pedestrian Bridge, and I heard that familiar cry
mm-hmm.
of a falcon coming upriver. And then it landed on the bridge, and then there was a second one, and they were in full song. And I'm wondering if, in fact, the population is increasing and that they're working their way up the waterways.
Hmm.
And
the answer is
mating season.
Yes. And it can be safely said that peregrine falcons are nesting on each of the bridges along the Hudson River. They like bridges. They like, naturally, they will nest on cliff faces.
Looking over water.
Usually looking over water or broad expanse. And their MO is to go out there and take down birds that are in flight. They have an incredible speed that they can catch up. And if there's no place for a small bird like a robin or a pigeon or a mourning dove to get away, like out over the water, it's kind of like, but there you go. So they're normally attracted to that kind of habitat. Natural or man-made bridges are just a replication of their preferred sites.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they nest there, and that'd be fantastic. And speaking of picking off animals in flight, I'm sitting on my back porch a couple weeks ago, and a hawk went flying by with something black in its beak with a bunch of other crows beating on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hawk landed, and the crows were in the trees yelling and screaming and diving.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how it works.
Well,
yeah, it was pretty interesting to see.
Very definitely, yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Hey,
thanks,
thank
Lisa.
You.
That's nature's rich pageant for you, right?
Hey, the hawk's got babies to feed, too.
Let's go to Ann in Altamont. Ann, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to thank you for a comment you made the last time you were on about I love birds, but not when they nest on my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And you commented on get a rubber snake. And for years we've tried wire mesh, wood, all kinds of things to discourage birds from nesting. And then, of course, once they nest, we just deal with cleaning up the mess. And the rubber snake has been perfect.
Wow. Wonderful. Brilliant idea.
And I wanted to know that. And I also wanted to know, when we were in Costa Rica in the winter, we went to a place where hundreds of hummingbirds were coming into these feeders that this woman along the mountainside had set up. And they all just seemed to come to the feeders all at once. I mean, she had a collection thing there so people could drop money in so she could keep her feeders going, but it was just wondrous to see them all.
Cool. Yeah, that's wonderful. And the same, so not to that extent, to that scale, but the same sort of thing happens in places like Arizona and Colorado, and California, where the hummingbirds seem to be more sociable. And perhaps it's about the desert environment. Well, I don't know about the tropics in Costa Rica, for example, but perhaps in the desert they have to get along because their liquid resources are so scarce that it's like some of our colonial nesting birds, like the martins and the great blue herons. The preferred sites are so scarce that they have to get along so that they can maximize the breeding season.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551, the number, and Francis in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Francis.
Hello, folks.
Hello.
Rich, I have a bird song I hope you can identify.
Excellent.
I know it's a small bird, and it's very loud, and if it's the one I got my binoculars on last year, it has a red bib. But it sounds like, I can't do the pitch and everything, it sounds like, tweet eater, tweet eater, tweet eater, tweet.
Ah.
Tweet eater, tweet eater, tweet eater, tweet.
Uh-huh.
Ever?
The one with the red patch was the one on the other side of the bird that was singing. What you did was a very excellent, and congratulations, of an imitation of the Carolina Wren song.
Oh.
Carolina Wren.
Carolina Wren. It's a plain brown wrapper bird with just a kind of like a buffy, orangey, but not really strongly patterned coloration on it. But it's a small bird, very, very, very vocal. To me, it's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. Well,
so what was the red one with the patch?
The one with the red patch sounds, the description sounds like the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Ah, the old rose-breasted grosbeak.
That
boy.
One, yes.
So
yes.
I was just mixing up because you try to find little birds in the trees and leaves and the shadows. But, last year I live in a place where there's open hall, and upstairs, early about 4 o'clock in the morning, it came singing loud and echoing. So definitely don't want that bird too close anymore.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, a lot of friends just sort of have mixed emotions about the presence of a a Carolina wren.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, if you do want to get one closer.
Oh, look at that rose-breasted grosbeak. Beautiful bird.
Yeah, catchy.
Yeah.
If you do want to get one closer, here's a trick.
Okay.
Imitate the sound of a wren alarm call.
And what's the wren alarm call?
It goes like this. Psh, 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 psh.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Psh, 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 psh.
You're on. You look around, there might be a wren coming in.
Hmm,
but it draws them in. And what's interesting about that is it will also draw some of the other birds, like the chickadees and the nuthatches and the woodpeckers, will respond to that because they want to find out what's the problem. They want to, you know, nothing to see here, folks. Keep moving. Not for them. They want to come and check it out.
I'm going to try that today.
Do it.
Actually, tomorrow.
And do it because it will work.
All right, next
You'll
week.
Get them to pop up out of the shrubbery.
Really?
Yeah. They'll look up, they'll pop up, and they say, oh, hey, what's happening?
Good Lord. I'll get all the neighbors around and I'll entertain them.
Well, you could.
Watch this.
Yeah,
I'm Dr. Doolittle. All right, let's go back to the phones. Ed in Pine Bush. Ed, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, I have a question about turkeys, wild turkeys. I've seen them in my backyard my whole life growing up around in the woods, but I've never seen a nest. Where do they nest? Where do they lay eggs? How does that work?
Well, they do a good job of hiding where they lay eggs. And they're on the ground in the forest, in the woods, on the ground. And when a female is on the nest, you could walk right by and she will not let you know that you are close. She will sit there, and the coloration is so beautifully camouflaged that there's a good chance that you'll look right past them and never see them.
Huh.
And they
makes sense.
Yeah. And they'll lay about a dozen or so eggs. And after a while, you'll see a dozen or so poults come running around.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up is because, I've always thought they were ugly, to be honest. But I saw some little babies for the first time the other day, and they were not ugly, and that led me to wonder where they came from.
They're cute.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed. We appreciate it. Over to Chris in Chicopee. Chris, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, outer range birds, let's say northern lapwing, field fare. Mm-hmm. They come in, they hang around, everybody goes to see them, and then, like a salmon, I guess, they go back to wherever they live.
Maybe.
What if you took 50 field fares from Sweden or wherever they're at, bring them, drop them into Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are they all going to just like skip back to Sweden, or are they going to?
Oh no!
I'm wondering why the starlings stayed when they brought the starlings over, but these other birds come in and they're gone.
Well, the thing is a lot of factors involved there, and the starling is a European bird species that were brought over by bunch of people with bad ideas. I mean, it was a good idea at the time, the Victorian era. There was a lot of importing of exotic birds and plants and animals, and for various reasons. Some of it was for to stock beautiful birds like the peacock and the swans. The other ones is the starling, and some of the other ones were brought over by these people who thought it would be a great idea to have the birds mentioned by Shakespeare flying around Central Park, New York City, doing the Shakespearean festival. You know, so they bought boxcars full of boxes full of different birds. Then the starling and the house sparrow were amongst the other ones, the greenfinch and the hawfinch and the bullfinch and the goldfinch. And the starling was the only one to survive through that bunch. The rest of them just perished.
The climate and everything else.
Factors that come into play. And the house sparrow was introduced from various parts of Europe to various parts of North America. They stayed put and flourished and did well.
Okay.
A lot of other birds did not. The skylark and the like. They just, some of the pheasant species that they tried to release just simply didn't hack it.
Let's go quickly to Frederick and Colony. Frederick, we have about a minute here.
Yes. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hey, I had a... This past winter, I had the honor of having a pair of great horned owls build a nest in the back and have young. But the crows spotted it. And the young were, they were jumping around in the tree, the two of them that were there. But I was just kind of curious. I didn't see them. Well, I tried getting your last show, so it's been about 5 weeks since they've moved. I don't know if the young made it. Would you say at that point they could fly?
Not really. Young owls can hop out of the nest, and they regularly do this. It's a natural part of the progression. They hop out of the nest before they can really fly, and they'll walk around, hop around, flutter around, and during the day and night, someplace nearby. Mom and Pop will take care of them on the ground, and all is good.
Okay, well, Frederick, that's where we will have to leave the program for today. Unfortunately, we left the lines loaded, but that's what happens when Rich Guthrie's in the house. Rich, if anyone wants to email you, what is the email address again?
Easy Pickens. My name, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com. That's G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com. And once again, where can we find the blog?
TimesUnion.com.
Whips and Widows.
Whips and Widows, yes.
All right, but it's safe for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Rich Guthrie.
Why wouldn't it be?
Fabulous job, man. Thank you for coming on short notice once again. Support comes from George Heigel Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany. ParkAlbany.com for on-street and garage options. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and spirits. Live music weekends, ChesterCommonTable.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom fabrication, commercial casework, and interactive kiosks for trade shows, museum exhibits, and special events, EmpireExhibits.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thank you for all you did during the fun drive. Man, oh man, it was great. It's great to be back with you at regular programming. And Zach Malloy was our engineer. The phones were answered today by Carol Lipani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the renowned, sometimes renowned, mostly renowned science panel will be here. Yes, the Science Forum tomorrow. In the meantime, stand by for news.